I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Blaster Cannon, Den of Geeks, Star Wars, and Expanded Universe podcast. This week, we're bringing you a news-heavy episode as the marketing machine gears up for the launch of Episode 9, and some exciting announcements arrive from Del Rey. With news from Galaxy's Edge and Star Wars Resistance coming into the home stretch of Season 1, let's see what Star Wars has in store. Hey friends, how are you?
I am well. I almost thought you were talking to the audience. I was like, kind of like, oh, when's the audience? Oh, it's talking to me and Seth. No, I'm doing well. Just hanging out, listening to lots of podcasts, listening to lots of the Midnight Synthwave band. So, yeah, doing good. How about you, Seth? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Not bad. Just living life.
Oh, man. So I got tickets to a Lord Huron concert in the summer, which I'm super excited for if we're going to talk about music real quick. Saf, what are you listening to? Yeah. Do you have a favorite like band right now?
Oh, yeah, Front Bottoms. Still.
Cool.
It's been like a year and I still love them.
Wait, hold on a second. Who are you seeing, Megan?
Lord Huron. They're kind of a folk rock synth kind of thing.
Sounds good.
I love synth. Love me some synth wave.
Definitely recommend them. Okay, so most exciting thing in Star Wars movie news this month was definitely the Episode 9 wrap photo posted by J.J. Abrams and John Boyega. We are starved for Episode 9 content. We are starved for it. I'm loving the jokes about how the title for Episode 9 will only be revealed after the credits of Episode 9.
I hadn't heard that joke, but that's real good.
Wow.
Right? No credit to me, credit to Twitter. So we did get a little bit of information out of the J.J. Abrams mystery box, which was this wonderful photo, along with some other photos of the cast in the wrap party. But the most important one was the, like, you know, the cool official photo of Rey, Poe, and Finn hugging on the set of a desert location. My heart immediately jumped back to when I first saw The Force Awakens, and when the fandom became so energized about this trio of characters, and then of course the trio hasn't been together in the two movies.
the end of the Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So this photo made me, my heart grew three sizes as I saw them. So I'm really hoping that they're actually going to be together more often in this movie. I know they were also together in some of the comics. So how do you all feel about this? Were you also kind of excited and energized? Are you tired of like the saga film discourse? And what do you feel about like the trio based on this photo?
I got very emotional when I saw the photo. I think it was one of those times when I woke up and everyone was talking about something and I was like, what did I miss? And then I went and found the photo and just kind of teared up a little bit because seeing them all together and hugging and like Poe, well, I guess Oscar Isaac's like emotional looking face. And I was like, oh no, this is too much. Because like I have been a bit burned out in Star Wars, not for like any particular reason, it's just because life's been busy and I don't have that much time to spend energy on being excited about Star Wars or thinking about Star Wars at the moment, but seeing that just pulled me right back in. I was like, yes, I love these saga films and I love these characters so much, and now I have to wait till December. Thanks, JJ.
Yeah,
it's just, this is like a soft photo.
Yeah, I
thought it was really cool. I know we had some leaks of the costumes recently, and As far as, you know, I can't really see Finn super, super well, but he seems like he's wearing essentially the same thing from the previous two movies, which is fine. I love that look of Finn. But you see Poe Dameron wearing his kind of new outfit, and that's kind of cool. Like, I got to see that in a great picture. And you saw Daisy Ridley wearing essentially something from the first film, essentially. And that's kind of a bummer, to be honest. I loved her Octu outfit a lot. It's one of those things where it was cool. You wonder what exactly the significance of that desert planet they're on. You're assuming it's a desert planet that they're on. Yeah.
Did they make Finn go back to Jakku? Because that's just mean.
You know, a part of me wants, honestly, Saf, a part of me really wants it to be Tatooine if it really is.
Oh, I know. Okay. I know you. I knew you would want to be Tatooine before you even said it.
Oh, well, you know me too well. If you're going to end the saga, which you shouldn't, but anyway, if you're going to, might as well end it where it all began, in my opinion. And that's the thing with episode 9, that I think that, like, they're still kind of hammering home the last of the saga and all that stuff. You know, if they're going to do it, let's do it the right way. Let's promote it. Like, you know, I've always said, you know, when they announced that, I said, well, if they hope the marketing says every saga has a beginning, every saga has an ending. And I think that would be really fun and interesting. And if it ended on Tatooine, like a big showdown between Rey and Kylo Ren on Tatooine, that'd be really interesting and cool, I think. So, because, you know, if she did say kill Kylo, or Kylo died on Tatooine, it would be very poetic, you know, and very much in line of,
oh my,
like,
gosh, that's my favorite poetic Skywalker line. I grew up here. You're going to die here.
And that's the thing. So I kind of, that's the, to me, like, seeing Poe's costume, which, by the way, I like Poe's costume way more in this than in Last Jedi. I didn't like his Last Jedi jacket, because the rebel insignia on his shoulder just seemed like very 90s X-Men to me. And it bothered me. It didn't seem like Star Wars. And that's just my opinion. And seeing him in a more like outfit like he has in the picture and in the leaked photo that picture confirms, makes me go, yeah, that seems more like Star Wars to me. It seems more in line. So yeah, I everything looks good. I do hope Daisy has a little bit more of a cooler outfit besides just her same version of her first costume. But
I,
you know,
agree.
Whatever.
I have some thoughts about her costume, the little of what we've seen of it. I also think it was different. Obviously, we don't know when this photo was taken. I really want to see her in something reminiscent of Luke's Return of the Jedi costume, whether that's more or whether that's...
Yeah, I do wonder if this is, like, her only costume change or she gets more than one. Because
yes,
we do see her switch outfits in The Last Jedi. And, like, in previous Star Wars movies, like, some characters have had more than one outfit change. In some cases, Padme's many outfit changes in one movie, which is, you know, for the narrative reasons. So, like, it's possible this isn't Rey's final outfit. Or if it is, she also has another outfit in the movie. So I'm not, like, basing all my speculation on this outfit on, like, this is the outfit that she has. It's probably, like, the main one. But I hope we see more looks, because I always love more Star Wars looks anyways.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I bought the Black Series Octu Rey figure with the poncho. I think she looks fantastic. It's a great
outfit. I love that poncho. Jyn Erso on the poncho. Star Wars just needs more good ponchos.
Yeah, they can pull it off, because I couldn't pull off a poncho. Do you guys remember when ponchos were big in, like, the early 2000s? And, like, all, like, the 40-year-old ladies all had, and the 50-year-old ladies all had ponchos when they went out? I thought that was really weird. Anyway,
I noticed that Rey has that armband on, and some people pointed out that that's the place where she was hit, where she would have a scar. And I think that's kind of cool. I also think that if she's going to be scarred, they should show it and not cover it up to make her look prettier. That, like, if she's gonna look like a warrior, like, why not give her a scar? So I was kind of like, like, side-eyeing that speculation a little bit, not because I thought it was incorrect, but because I want her to look tough and for her to have a scar. Yeah. If she's going to. I think that is kind of interesting, because Kylo's scar has been such a big point of, like, a focal point in the film and in the way that he is shot.
It's such a focal point, Megan, that they moved it completely in the second film.
Yes, that's true. It didn't stay in the same place, but it was important to his look. It wasn't accurate to the previous movie, but it was very noticeable.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just had to say that. It became such a focal point, they had to move it to make it so much more significant.
We all, like, forgot that along the way, didn't
we? Isn't it as well because, like, it looked real goofy where it was originally, so they just, like, didn't want to keep it there? Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, I'm making, I apologize.
But it's this idea that, like, the hero is scarred, and the villain is scarred, and the villain is ugly, and whereas, like Luke Skywalker had the scars from the Wampa attack, because that's how Mark Hamill looked at that time, and they kind of went with that. They covered it up to a degree, but it became part of his character, and I liked that, I would be interested in seeing that for Rey also. I also at first thought that her hair was kind of a step back, was that she'd gone back to those ponytails, but I noticed that the ones that she has now are more, they're closer to her head, they're shorter in the back, and that means that they'd be harder to grab in a fight. So it's a similar look, it's also similar to Leia's look.
Yeah, but it's a that's little what I was gonna more... say. It's mature. Like a more, refined and mature version of her.
Yeah, and a little more of that, like, warrior look.
Yeah, the look that, like the hair Leia's that Leia has thought? In The Last Jedi.
Sorry.
Or The Force Awakens. Sorry, like, one of Leia's mature looks.
Sorry, I'm just holding on to dear hope that she could still be a Solo. Sorry.
I wasn't sure what you were getting at there, but I see it now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, like...
I mean, you can say Leia was probably the closest to a mother figure she's had.
Anyway.
I just gotta say, I love the character Rey. I really do. I think she's a great character, and I want her to be like, I love the idea of her being Kylo's sister so much, but I know it's not going to happen, but it just bums me out, because that's what I wanted so badly, especially in what Rian Johnson's given us. Like, I'm like, man, this is perfect. Like, to me, when I watched Last Jedi the first time, I remember thinking, this is a possibility. Oh, this is so good. I mean, even though, like, there's weird, creepy, weird stuff in it, like they're doing to each other and googly eyes, this would still work. No. And so, yeah, I'm still holding out to the 0.001% chance it could happen. So,
oh, pal.
I respect that.
I'm admitting it. I know it's a long shot.
The symbolism is there in her hair.
Exactly. It's a coach.
Yeah, so that's all that I have about that photo. I'm looking forward to more. It definitely, I want to see the trio be friends. That's very important to me. We may be able to see more of them by the time Triple Force Friday rolls around.
Oh, my God.
is that your wallet screaming, or is that like a... like a philosophical, you're opposed to this on an emotional level.
Someone wants to speak. I hate you! That's my wallet.
Yeah.
That's my wallet yelling at me.
So the traditional fall Force Friday event, well, it's not always fall. The toy event is, this year is triple. I'm making movements with my hands. You can't see them. They're very dramatic.
Thrice.
With toys from Episode 9, The Mandalorian and Jedi Fallen Order available on October 4th. So there's a lot of speculation we could do about what does this mean about release schedules for things. It's, you know, good timing for the beginning of the holiday season with the movie coming out in December. The thing that I'm most interested in this is that what does this mean about Jedi Fallen Order? Does this mean that we can have some kind of guarantee that the game will come out in holiday 2019? Like, is it on the release schedule that it was supposed to be on? There's just been so many changes in the video game, like, Star Wars licensing world right now that I will hardly believe that Jedi Fallen Order exists until I hold it in my hands. So I'm just wondering, like, will we know more about it from the toys?
It's weird, because, like, other games don't, like, do that. They don't, like, well, I mean, there are some games, but they're the games that are, like, solid games. But, like, most, like, I don't know, like, God of War or whatever didn't, like, release a bunch of toys in preparation for the game coming out, you know? Like, this is a very Star Wars thing, so, like, it's hard to know what this says about the game, because games don't really do this. I'd go as far as saying, like, this shows that Lucasfilm and, like, everyone has confidence the game is going to actually get released around, like, at some point, that the toys make sense, and also that it's going to be released. And so yeah, I like that. Yeah, I like the fact they have confidence this game is actually going to be released, but I don't know, like, I don't know if it's even going to come out then. Like, I know how much games can, like, get pushed back and why it happens. And I don't know anybody involved in the game, and even if I did, I wouldn't be able to talk about it anyways, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm like you, Megan. I'm not going to believe this game is actually real until I, like, am playing it, and even then, I'm going to struggle.
It makes me wonder about who is going to find value in these toys if they aren't as familiar with the characters. Like, will the average video game fan, are kids even the market for this kind of thing? I think about how...
not kids.
No, because, like, when you go into Toys R Us, you know, you have, like, the aisle with Star Wars and Marvel, and then the... Actually, what I'm thinking of is a Target. The Target near where I work has, like, the... kind of side of the aisle is devoted to basically game figures for adults. Like, if I go looking for, like, Destiny stuff, or, like, there'll be Assassin's Creed figures there, those are in their own, like, little section. And so I'm wondering if these Jedi Fallen Order figures are going to be in that kind of section, or if they're going to be in with the others, like, the kids' Star Wars toys, because they're advertised together in this Force Friday post.
This is a weird thing, because, yeah, this is kind of new, really, like, in the grand scheme of, like, Star Wars and games. Like, the idea of Star Wars toys for Star Wars games isn't new, but the idea of, like, advertising them as part of, like, the movie push as well, the TV show push and everything is new. So, like, it's hard to predict, like, where they'll end up going, like, who they're aimed at, like, who is the game even aimed at, like, I don't know. This is weird, and I totally forgot that they were doing Jedi Fallen Order things for this, because, like, it just totally slipped my mind, because I was like, yeah, the movie and the TV show, and the game, sure, the game that's happening, yes, I believe that. It's weird, because, like, I wouldn't buy them for my nephew, because, like, he's 8, he's probably not going to be able to play this game, because he's a kid. I probably won't buy them for myself until I've played the game and decided I like characters, unless there's a really cool looking robot. I don't know. It's weird, right? Is it just because there's Star Wars collectors who will buy any toy? Is it because Star Wars just makes toys of every character? Like, Star Wars is weird.
I'm glad you thought it was weird too, because I was wondering that same thing. What does this say about who this game is for? And I'm still a big shrug emoji. I still don't really know.
All right, yeah. So I'm gonna knock you all out with some truth here. I'm mostly kidding. Mostly. No,
I was waiting to see where you were going with that one.
All right. Yeah. No. So basically, here's the deal. You're right, Seth, that this is the first time they've ever, like, associated a video game with a film release, in a sense to where they're putting everything out at once, hence the name Triple Force Friday, right? That to me is the weird thing. But I have a couple ideas of where they might be going. And I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of get everything kind of pumped up together. Because if you remember, Battlefront 2 came out before episode 8. And it had a novel. It had the Infernal Squad that came out the month before, or the summer before, excuse me. So they had a tie-in novel. They definitely had action figures tied. It wasn't a wide release, but they had GameStop figures.
That actually makes me think about also Shadows of the Empire had that whole marketing push. That was a game that also had figures with it.
Well, yes. So So here's what I think is going to happen, or what they're going to do. Okay. I think that they're not. So I think they're going to release a bunch of pre-Mandalorian material and, you know, Jedi Fallen Order prequel, like book stuff, comic books, whatever you want, all in between the summer and September, or in the release of Triple Force Friday. So they're going to have some stuff there, but there's going to be all, we're going to get all these book announcements in celebration in April.
Oh God.
We're
gonna get a crap load, right?
Tons of books. So if we're anything like the Battlefront book, we may get a Jedi Fallen Order book before that. Okay. So
yes,
we then might get some investment with these characters that Seth is talking about, and say, well, how do I know I want to invest in this game and these characters before I play the game or whatever? Well, if you read the book, like if everyone loved Iden Versio, like we all did, mostly from reading Infernal Squad, if they would have maybe released an Iden Versio toy at Target that was for the mass audience instead of at GameStop or whatever, then maybe we probably would have all bought it or something like that. So to answer your question, Megan, I think that this is all made for the collectors like us, or who are hard Star Wars fans, who then will tie themselves to be like, oh man, I really like such and such a character. I'm going to go buy that for whatever, whether it be the Mandalorian, Jedi Fallen Order, or maybe Episode 9. I think they know that maybe the sequel trilogy may not have as much pizzazz, if you will, with maybe with their main characters, if they re-release these toys. Like Finn looks generally the same, right? Rey, as far as we know, looks kind of the same. And Poe looks a little different, and Poe is maybe the only figure I'd maybe would buy. I'm not going to buy any more Finn figures as of right now anyway. And Rey, I'm good with my Poncho Rey right now. This is from my own standpoint, but if you're looking at people who already have a Rey, a Poe, a Finn, what don't they have right now? Mandalorian toys, Jedi Fallen Order toys. So if you give them some pieces of information, like before the Force Friday comes out and after Force Friday comes out, you then get people excited and want to invest in the product that they're putting out, and also get them excited for the main event, which is the Mandalorian TV show, Jedi Fallen Order game, and Episode 9. So the way I see it is they know that not everyone's going to double dip on everything. So instead of like, hey, everyone, here's more Rey toys, here's more Poe toys, here's more Finn toys, they might say, here's a Finn toy, but here's some Knights of Ren, here's some...
holding out hope there, Paul.
Boy, there's going to be at least one or two. You know it, and I'll be buying every single one of them. Anyway, but I'm sorry, long-winded answer here. So what I'm trying to say is I also don't think they're going to give us a crap load from every section. So I expect only for... As far as toys go, I think we're only going to get maybe two at the most, maybe three per release. So meaning if Jedi Fallen Order gets two figures or three figures to that line, the Mandalorian would get two to three, and maybe Episode 9 gets three to four figures. That way you're not oversaturating the whole market all at once. It may be less than that. I don't know. But I imagine Episode 9 would have a little bit more. But
yeah,
think about this.
I would think that Episode 9 would have more than that, but it depends on sales.
Are we
going to
get another
Zuviar?
Yeah.
You have me over here going like, oh my gosh, who's going to write the Jedi Fallen Order book? Because you're right. Like, there presumably
now I'm thinking about that.
will be one. And so this is my exact thought process on that, is that Alexander Freed is busy. So the next option is...
I love that we had the same thought process on that.
Option is Christy Golden, who does not have a Star Wars project going on right now that we know of. She did the Inferno Squad book. So the other option that I thought would be good for what little we know about the tone of the game is Delilah Dawson, who also has she's booked also for another Star Wars project. So I would put my credits on Christy Golden for a Fallen Order book if that's a thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, and also, like, I think what's going to happen is I think we're going to get a couple things before Triple Force Friday, because I think it's only natural that they're going to have to, you know, really amp up these things. And again, you want to invest in these characters, The Mandalorian, Jedi Fallen Order, probably more so Jedi Fallen Order. But in all seriousness, I don't think The Mandalorian is going to have a ton of toys of it out there. But you know what they're going to have? They're going to have The Mandalorian himself. And maybe possibly the other Mandalorian that is going to be out there, we're assuming, and any other characters or whatever. So So to me, it's like we're going to get, they're not going to oversaturate the market with a ton of new, like eight toys per line. I just think, you know, you may get one or two. You're going to get the Mandalorian himself. That is a given in there. But as far as like tie-in comic books and tie-in books, who knows? You're probably going to get maybe one per Jedi Fallen Order, per Mandalorian. But how many are we going to get for Episode 9? Depends on the year gap, right? I mean, for Episode 8, what do we get for books? We got Cobalt Squadron, Phasma. What else did we get?
We got a couple other kids' books.
There were a couple Skywalker in the Journey 2 series. I don't remember.
Yeah, neither.
There's too many to look forward to for me to remember the details of the ones in the past right now.
I think there's going to be a plethora of, of things. So yes. I just think that, like, it's going to be not as many toys. There's going to be a decent amount of toys, trust me. But there's not going to be, like, four per line. I think it's going to be like, you know, maybe Fallen Order has two, Mandalorian has two, and then like Episode 9 has six or five or whatever. So maybe something along those lines. It's going to be lopsided at best. But as far as novels, books, making of books, get ready.
Good transition into the Galaxy's Edge tie-in books, because there are a lot of those too.
Yep, they sure are.
Wow.
So we're going to kind of go out of our like movie news section. Our sections are pretty loose in this episode, but moving into tie-in updates. So I'm just going to read these real quick, and then we can go through if you all have thoughts about them, because we do have a full list of content to be coming from Galaxy's Edge. So the one that's like the heftiest entry and therefore the most interesting to lore buffs is Black Spire by Delilah S. Dawson, coming September 3rd, which is described as a prequel to the Disney Parks experience. General Leia Organa dispatches her top spy to Batuu in a desperate search for resistance allies. There's a book called A Crash of Fate by Zoraida Cordova, coming out August 6th, which is a young adult novel about two best friends from Batuu who have a run-in with smugglers and pirates and presumably fall in love with each other. I don't know if that's what this book's really about, but it seems like it's angling that way. There's Star Wars Myths and Fables by Greg Mann with illustrations by Grant Griffin. It's described on the official site as featuring two stories that take place on the remote outer rim world of Batuu, plus many other untold tales from the edge of the galaxy, lushly illustrated. It has a cool dragon on the cover. It's, very like, classically illustrated, and a previously announced 5-issue comic series, Galaxy's Edge, written by Ethan Sachs with art by Will Slaney, which launches in April. So that's a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as typical, I'm most interested in Black Spire and the novel. They're doing their best to make sure that kids and whoever visits the park has plenty to occupy them. And what do you all think about those?
I'm excited for Black Spire because it's got that character, whose name I've already forgotten.
The woman who was investigating Phasma?
Yeah, her. And she was like one of my favorite parts of Phasma because her interactions with the dude, whose name I've also forgotten, the lobster Phasma, she was really cool. And when I heard that this book was about her, I was like, yes! That's how excited I am about this book. I am really keen to see her again because I thought this character would disappear into the shadows of Star Wars, like, canon and just never come back.
Yeah, she was cool, so I'm glad to see more of her.
Yeah, the Myths book is what I'm probably the most excited about to be honest, because there's that cool dragon versus like a Jedi it looks like on there, and that just reminds me of like the Last Jedi, Tales of the Jedi. I love, and that's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of an old school Jedi tale and very fantasy, as from the fantasy element, which is my favorite element of Star Wars, is the fantasy element, and I want more of that. We've got a lot of sci-fi elements from Star Wars recently with like all the Alphabet Squadron, which again, I like that stuff, but my favorite aspect is more the fantasy element, which is, I think, the roots of Star Wars. And seeing that gives me hope that like, we're going to get more stuff like that. I hope it's not just like a tall tale where maybe the story group's a little bit nervous about doing some kind of definitive old school Jedi tale. So without maybe doing some kind of backstory, if you will, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to put your pigeonhole yourself already and just some random tale.
Yeah. Like that's why I wasn't interested in the Legends of the Luke Skywalker book, particularly because they didn't feel real, quote.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, I really want them to be, I want it to be a legitimate tale. Not just like, I heard about this one story that it could be true. No, I don't want to do that. I want them to grab a freaking holocron and it goes, let me tell you a tale, young one. A tale about a lightsaber. You know, something like that. And then you go in.
Like, exactly like that.
Exactly like that. See, exactly. So that's what I want. I don't want none of this, like, tons of, well, I heard they just had a lightsaber. No, I want a fight. I want definitive old school Jedi versus a dragon stuff, or alien dragon, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, that's what I'm most excited about.
Very good. We need to see how many different voices we can have you do for potential audience members for this book. So, I wanted to make sure to include the announcement that we were very excited about Alphabet Squadron. I actually went on Tashi Station's flagship podcast to talk about this. We have an episode called Alphabet Soup, so I don't want to repeat myself here, but suffice it to say that I was very excited to learn that Alphabet Squadron will be the first in a trilogy, as well as having a tie-in comic. The main character is a woman called Erica Quell, and it sounds amazing, and everything about it is good.
The more I hear about it, the more excited I get. When I saw the announcement that it's trilogy, I felt a weight lift from me, knowing that we were getting three new Star Wars books from Alex Reed.
I'm not sure if the weight has left me or if the weight has increased, because I know these are going to just tear my heart out.
Yeah, there's also that. But it's like the knowledge that I actually have some, like, because I have been, like, relatively excited for, like, some of the books, but I haven't read them because I'm really bad at keeping up with books, especially in Star Wars. I've just fallen so behind. But, like, I will absolutely grab these books the day they come out and just devour them. And I'm really excited to have, like, three Star Wars books that I am excited.
So ready for this.
It's going to be good.
Like, my entire thread is just going to be, like, subtweeting at this book. Just going, oh, no. Oh no.
Just more and more intensity in your own nose as you go further along.
Yeah.
I'll just text you any questions I have and that I need to avoid for your alphabet obsession.
I'm trying to be chill about it. I'm trying not to overwhelm anyone with my alphabet obsession. Hey,
just do you. I just know I can get around it, so that's all I care about. All right. Megan's going crazy. I'm gonna go ahead and text her a question.
I'm just going to answer you with, oh, no, you realize that, right?
Well, and really fast, is the TIE Fighter book, is it part of the trilogy, or is it it's a tie-in material?
I'm not sure where it is placed in terms of the chronology of the series, but it's a focus on the enemies. So, like,
yeah, right. So, like, separate.
Alphabet Squadron is competing against or fighting against this particular TIE Fighter squadron.
Okay.
Does that answer the question? Okay.
Somewhat. I'm good.
A spinoff of a spinoff thing.
Yes. I like it. But I thought it was included as a part of the trilogy. But no, Alexander Freed has three books total, and this TIE Fighter book by Jody Hauser is a tie-in material.
Yeah, the comic books are tie-in.
In terms of numbers, it's like four things.
Gotcha. Okay. That's you answered the question correctly.
Yeah, and the TIE Fighter series has several issues. I think it's five or so. Don't quote me on that, though.
Yeah,
maybe Star Wars will finally get me to read the comics with this, tying it in with an Alex Freed property.
Seth.
You know, I do want to read the comics. Like, legitimately, no shade on the comics. Like, I love comics. It's just really hard to find time to, like, for one thing, get the comics and then read the comics.
Jody Hauser is very good as well. If you're going to pick up something, Age of Republic is a very good spot to start with just these one shots.
That's right, yeah. I'm sorry, Paul.
It's fine. Just ignore me. It's fine.
It's okay. We'll have an episode soon about comics, and then I will have to catch up on the comics.
That's right. All right, I'm happy. Moving on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, Queen's Shadow, the Padme book, is coming out next month.
And... All right, moving on. I'm kidding. Hey. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry.
It's important news, I think. So I read it. I enjoyed it, but did not love it. I don't want to go into too much detail right now, but I think if you really love Padme, if you go in, like, you know, really, like, want more about Padme, want more about the Handmaidens, I think you will absolutely get that. It's a book that has a lot for people that want the kind of character building and emotion, and it's good for people who want, like, facts and to update Wikipedia articles. It has a lot of kind of connecting tissue between parts of the prequels. So
that'll for be me cool then. I've also heard from like people who are really big Padme fans who have gotten heiresses of the books that like they love it. So if you are a big Padme fan, this is absolutely the book for you. I'm pretty excited for it. Like not on the same level I am for Alphabet Squadron, obviously, but like I am definitely keen to get this book when it comes out and read through it.
I saw The Phantom Menace last weekend, and I thought Padme was, like, really cool.
She was good in that one. I think she's probably the best. Has, like, the best, like, I don't, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The best prequel for her.
Yeah, well, she's the hero in that one. She's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's anyway, I want to end on a positive. I like Padme a lot in Phantom Menace.
So there was also an excerpt from Master and Apprentice, and I know these heathens don't really read excerpts, so I read it. It is about Qui-Gon is offered a seat on the Jedi Council, and kind of doesn't want to do it, because if he does, he can't take a Padawan, and he's already thinking about whether he wants Obi-Wan to be his Padawan. So the writing was fine. It didn't quite have as much intensity as the story in From a Certain Point of View that Claudia Gray wrote, but it was pretty good. I really loved kind of the Jude Watson era of like Obi-Wan canon, so curious to see how this connects to that.
That's interesting, because that's quite a divergence from like the original Legend stuff about Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, because I devoured that stuff. I love the Jedi Apprentice book so much. And it seems like they're actually changing things up there. And I was like, because I haven't read any of the other Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan material yet that's come out. I plan to, but I'm really bad at catching up on stuff. So I have been like really curious how the relationship is going to be in canon as opposed to Legends.
Yeah, I wonder what more about Obi-Wan's backstory too, because in the Jude Watson books, right, he was almost not made a Jedi. Like
Obi-Wan. Yeah, he was like basically kicked out to go to the agriculture corps.
Agri-Corps.
Please, it's so good. I love the fact that like Jedi who aren't quite cut out to be Jedi still go and help planets. Anyways, yeah, because Qui-Gon doesn't want him. He kind of gets forced with Obi-Wan. But in a way, I feel like changing it that Qui-Gon is very much considering Obi-Wan as a Padawan, it's actually like nicer for Obi-Wan throughout the series, because then he doesn't have this like whole, I forgot the right word I need, but like feeling like complex, he's not,
right?
Of not being wanted, not being a proper Jedi and stuff that he then projects onto Anakin potentially. Like we get this character who had that good figure who wanted him and trained him. And I kind of prefer that in a way, just because Obi-Wan lives a tragic life. It's nice that he's getting something good in the prequels.
Yes. And it's hard to know from this excerpt what exactly their relationship is, like what, how they've interacted before. So
yeah,
I ended up reading this excerpt, reading the Qui-Gon edition of, the Qui-Gon issue of the Age of Republic comics, and watching the Clone Wars episodes where Yoda talks to Qui-Gon's spirit all within 24 hours, which was interesting. They, in the new canon, they're really hammering home this idea that Qui-Gon is like, he's all about balance, and he kind of thinks about the Force in a different way from the rest of the Council. So Qui-Gon was the first kind of Age of Republic comic that didn't really stun me. The other ones that I've read, I really liked. This one I found, because it was very philosophical, but I found that its illustration of that idea of balance was a little bit murky, but it was still a solid story, and the art actually reminded me of Annihilation, which is compliment. Yes. So if you'd like to see Qui-Gon fighting and or communing with plant monsters, check it out.
I find it interesting, like, how much Qui-Gon's kind of being changed in the new canon compared to how he used to be in Legends. Like, he's kind of one of the only, like, main film characters they can do that with that much, because he's only in The Phantom Menace, but he's still a vital character to the entire saga. But they can still, like, kind of change how he is, because in like, Jude Watson stuff, he's, like, a little bit reckless. He's got some anger there. He doesn't want Obi-Wan as a Padawan. He's kind of, like, he's a little bit mean at times. And now it's more, like, he's a bit more, like, he's kind of portrayed in The Phantom Menace, like a bit more like in balance, like in love with nature and the living force and stuff like that, and like kind of wiser because of it. It's been interesting watching his character kind of shift between Legends and canon.
I'm a big fan of Kenobi and Qui-Gon, and I love those characters, and I love Claudia Gray. I really liked Lost Stars. I really liked her excerpt or her little book from or part in the Tales from whatever that book was again. I forgot what it
from
was.
From a certain point of view.
Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't think of the name.
Backpaw. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Perfect. So I love that chapter. So I have not read this chapter. This is why I don't like reading like just isolated chapters before the book comes out. So I want to see everything in context. Like it may, like one chapter may not be good by itself, but then you read the chapter afterwards, it makes everything makes it better, you know? So
yeah,
that's why I don't like reading previews. I want to read the whole thing. So
you read the Qui-Gon comic issue?
I did, and I'm really behind on the comic. I know you're going to be very shocked about that, Saf, but yeah, I'm very behind on the Republic comic books. I've read the Qui-Gon and the Darth Maul and the Obi-Wan, and I haven't read since then.
Oh, and, me too. Okay, so we're in the same exact place, pretty much.
So we both love Darth Maul, and then we both talked about that. The Qui-Gon story is really good. The Obi-Wan Kenobi one isn't bad. It's not like great, but it's not bad. But I think those first two issues by Jody Houser are really good.
My problem, like, with the Qui-Gon comic was that he had this vision, right? And I'm going to spoil it so you can skip ahead if you'd like. It's, he has a fight with a thing and wins the fight, and it's portrayed as essentially a negative action. Like, he has a vision of, like, he's just killed people, you know, when he thinks he was fighting a monster. And then he leaves, and it's all in his head. Somewhere along the way, he says, or the idea is that balance has been created. And I thought that what he had done was very clearly a dark side action, very similar to, like, Luke's experience in the cave on Dagobah. But somehow by doing it, he had created balance, and that didn't follow to me. That didn't, similar to a lot of the Force philosophy in the Clone Wars, it didn't seem to have an internal logic to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, it was very much, if you were trying to go for the Dave Filoni style of Force philosophy, she nailed it.
No, yeah, I really like the first issue where Qui-Gon really goes into, like, the Force, and, you know, and I haven't read it in a while, but I remember it just being really kind of deep and not really action-packed, but really giving and going into those ideas. And there was, like, wasn't like a monster,
not so much deep as just obscure.
Yeah, you could say that too. There's something about the way Jodi got the Force, and you see that even in like the Darth Maul issue, and she really got the ideas of what the elements, yes, of the light and the dark side and all that. And again, I don't remember the Obi-Wan as well as the other ones, and that should probably tell you it didn't really connect with me as like the other two. But yeah, I remember really liking that Qui-Gon issue of how much it dealt with the Force and how he viewed it differently than the other Jedi, and that was very evident throughout that issue. And then you have the Darth Maul issue, which is fantastic. So yeah, we're him, you know, just trying to scope out a potential Force user. So fantastic stuff. So I recommend reading the comics. I haven't read all of them. I've heard they're great. I've heard really good things about the Jango Fett issue. So I'm really excited about reading that. So yeah, I'm going to get caught up this weekend. I think I'm going to get caught up on Resistance and the comic. I'm really behind on all the comics. So I'm going to get caught up on the comics and Resistance all this weekend. It's a Star Wars weekend.
Well, again, that leads us right into Resistance, which is the last topic that we have today. I think last time we talked about it, none of us were particularly impressed, but had hopes that it would get better in the end of season one. And so far, I think that is true. You two are both still a little bit, not all the way through the season, right? I have seen one episode and one screener, so I'm actually one ahead. So between us, we're kind of caught up.
Balanced, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, balanced, yeah. Just like Qui-Gon. So the second half of the season has varied a lot from Bebo, which I feel is actually one of the show's worst episodes so far, to episodes like the First Order Occupation and onward, which really have made me care about the show a lot more. So generally, overall, do you think the show is getting better?
Yeah. For me, the show has been it starts off kind of rough, I was very critical on this show, on my other podcast, and it's just one of those things where my main criticism is still, I think, there, but it's the Star Wars elements are starting finally to kind of come through my criticism, if that makes any sense. I'm not a huge fan of Kaz still. He's not my favorite character. I'm not a big fan of the bumbling hero that kids can connect to, and I know that's what he's there for, but he kind of outshined all the Star Wars elements, and they were I'm not saying that the Star Wars elements were dumbed down in the previous like five episodes. They just weren't as prevalent, I think, and it just seemed like his bumblingness and his oh shucks, oh my gosh, I'm gonna fall off this ledge. It just got old after a while. But it seems like now that it's kind of hit like episode 6 or 7, things are starting to kind of finally, the Star Wars elements are starting to kind of come in, like with the turtle characters that are running the Colossus that we find out, all that stuff, that's all in there. That's really interesting. Poe Dameron shows up and takes on a Kwakalian ape lizard, which is an amazing idea, by the way. There's the Star Wars elements are starting to come out there, and I think kind of tone down Kaz just a little. But at the same time, I'm definitely liking everything a lot more. And I love, love, love the designs. I think the designs are all great. I love the ship designs. Most of the character designs are great. It's just the stories themselves just aren't super engaging, but they are getting better. And I love, and I don't know the names of the characters as well, and it's because I'm not connected to the show as much as I'd like to be. But at the same time, I love when the pirates show up. I like that idea. I like the idea of the Colossus being that's this own isolated kind of, not a government, but kind of its own thing, and it runs by its own rules. And the fact that's there, that's where the First Order is kind of introduced and why they have a presence there in the first place. And you get the idea that the First Order has it in their best interest to kind of scope this place out and take things over like this. And not necessarily by force. And even though that's not as like fun and as interesting, it's not as fun maybe as an eye pleasing, like, this is so exciting, they're shooting lasers at each other all the time. No, it's more, it makes more sense of what the First Order is trying to do kind of discreetly, if you will. And that's what they're trying to do. And that's what they've kind of done in the sequel trilogy that I don't think the movies do a great job of explaining, but yeah. I think the source material, like all the books and the comics and now the cartoon shows, they have done a better job of explaining what the First Order really is. And again, a major downfall of the films, I think, is not explaining what the First Order is. The Empire is pretty obvious in the original trilogy. I think it's pretty obvious what everything is in the prequel trilogy. In the sequel trilogy, the First Order is just kind of like, what is this? And you get and I will credit so far, I'm not even as far along as what the First Order gets, even more information gets revealed about him, apparently, that I'm not even there yet.
You will definitely want to watch The Core Problem, at least, which is the most recent episode.
All I know is that BB-9E is in it at some point, and I need to watch it just for that.
Yes,
because
she's in.
It's like, this is literally like the most exciting thing for me, because she is actually like a character I really love, and I didn't ever expect to see her again. So the fact she's in Resistance is just amazing. Yeah, it's been getting like more complex, I guess, more solid and like interesting as it's gone on. I'm probably gonna do the thing again where I just binge a whole bunch of episodes, because I find that a really fun way to watch the show. Yeah, I think it's been getting stronger as it's been going.
I really enjoy the character of Sinara, who has become the most interesting character because she has to make a very dramatic choice. She was the pirate who starts to be friends with Kaz and his group, and she has to choose whether she's going to be on the side of the pirates or the side of the Colossus as the First Order threat heats up. And I just really like her. I think she kind of has that sense of like, yeah, she's a pirate, but I don't get the sense that she does it out of malice. The pirate leader refers to it as her home, so I have a feeling maybe she was raised there, but I have no idea. I'm just, like, making headcanons about that. But I kind of like to think that she was maybe an orphan, and she was found by them, and she kind of doesn't know another life, and now, like, the Colossus is showing her another life, which is not the most original story in the world, but it does set her up with a choice and with stakes. And she's quietly become much more interesting than Kaz to me.
Yeah, I haven't watched much after her, like, appearing as a character, but, like, I've been really interested in where she's going to go and, like, what they're going to do with her. So I'm excited to hear that she does, like, become really interesting.
Well, I think she's already interesting because...
I mean, she is already interesting. But, like, I'm excited that she actually, like, gets an arc about this kind of stuff.
No, yeah, totally. And for a given value, because it's not super deep, but it is something.
I love the idea that her and Kaz have a connection because they're both hiding something. Again, so far, I'm still four episodes behind. So,
yeah.
But this makes sure people understand, like, well, that's like, doesn't make any sense because of blah, blah, blah. I have no idea what's coming, so bear with. But what I love so far is that Kaz isn't falling for the governor's daughter. I'm not sure what we would call her. What's her name? I'm really bad with the names.
Yeah, Captain's daughter, Tora.
Tora, that's right. I like the character, but I like the idea that he's not falling in love with her, even though that could very
isn't
easily
she, like,
be.
I remember people talking about this on Twitter. She's like way younger than him. Like Kaz is like 20, like early 20s or something like that, or like late teens. Yeah. And she's like 16 or something like that. Like
she seems old. Really?
Yeah,
she
It's really hard to tell with all these characters.
It's really hard to tell, but that actually is a thing. She's way younger than him, which when I found that out, I was like, okay. Guessing that's romance isn't going to happen, which I'm happy about, because that's like the whole two main characters fall in love.
Oh,
but
right.
It was a shock for some people that did ship them. They were like, oh no, that's not good.
Is that really confirmed though, that she's like 16 years old?
Yeah, so yeah. It is.
Really? Okay.
So as far as I'm aware, I do think this show is, like, I have no idea how old Sainara is. Like, the ages are weird. Kaz is 20, and Tora is, like, 14, 15. So they have definitely kind of, I think they will not establish that as anything romantic. I also definitely, I kind of like that. There doesn't seem to be any of that going on right now. Regardless of the age, but yeah, that seems to be the canonical ages for them.
Yeah, I like the idea of them, like, having a sibling relationship, because, like, their relationship together have been really fun. Like, I mean, not their relationship, like, the interactions they have are really fun. It's really cute.
I will say I like Sainara and Kaz having something that they have in common, and that she senses that in him, and he's there. They have this kind of a strange attraction, in a sense, to where they're kind of opposites, but yet they kind of, like, can see each other themselves a little bit, like, yeah. And that's what I get from it, and I like that. Yeah. It's very charming, and it works.
I can see Sainara and Kaz.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'll be disappointed if it doesn't happen.
I mean, my real resistance ship is just Jaeger and myself, but Kaz and Sainara are fine.
I'm not someone who claims to say ship or anything like that. That's not my bag by any means. But at the same time, I would love to see those two characters hook up. That's my jam.
That's shipping, Paul. You're in there.
You're shipping. You're one of us now.
No, not ship. I will never say that.
Sorry, you did it already. So I had another question here. Is the show worth watching for Poe alone? Which is not really maybe the best way to phrase that. And what I mean by that is not, is he better than the other characters? But what do you think that you'd recommend Resistance to fans of the sequel trilogy who aren't really invested in Kaz, but do just want more of the trio from the sequels?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know how much Poe comes in later on, but from how much I've seen, I probably wouldn't, because he just kind of feels like a framing character for it. I mean, like, I'd be like, for all, go hard on it if you want to just see Poe's face. But, like, in terms of wanting more story about Poe and stuff, I wouldn't recommend it entirely. Like, the stuff with it, like, with the monkey, like, that was good. That was real good. So, like, yeah, there is stuff with Poe and him, like, that kind of expands on him as a character that is, like, a yes, absolutely. But then also, just, like, the show as a whole isn't about Poe, so not really.
Yeah, I would only recommend the show if you love Star Wars. And and I'm being 100% truthful. You have to really love Star Wars, I think, to really get invested in the show. And I hate saying that, because I think Rebels had definitely a more approachable and more entertaining overall value, that if you just kind of like Star Wars, you could probably be into it, I think. Whereas I think Resistance, you have to really love the content of Star Wars, period, to really get into the show. And that, again, that's just my opinion, but that's just what I think. Because I have struggled to get into the show still. Though I'm getting more into it.
I am a Star Wars.
Yeah. It's a slow burn, and it's not super engaging. And again, it's meant for a younger audience that's not supposed to be heavy. It's supposed to be more aimed and lighthearted, aimed at, like, children, yeah. Lighthearted. So I just don't really have, I just can't tell people to say, if you love Star Wars Episode 7 and 8, you have to watch Resistance. I'm like, no, you really don't. I mean, yeah. if you want to know more about the First Order, and that's something you really interest you, I'd say yes. But if you're like, I'm not a huge fan of the sequel trilogy, I'd be like, stay away from Resistance.
I mean, yeah, if you're not a fan of the sequel trilogy, you're not going to want to watch this probably. But that said, the Clone Wars and Rebels both started off very rough. Like, those first few episodes of the Clone Wars, like, whew, not great. Real not great. They're all right, but the Clone Wars doesn't really hit stride.
I
love those episodes.
Like, it's bad, Paul.
No,
no, I'm sorry. I'm kidding. No, the Yoda episodes, like, they're not bad. They're not bad. The problem is that if you're coming into them, like, not knowing anything about, like, side characters or side stuff in Star Wars, and just, like, expecting the prequel characters, you get Yoda, some random clone troopers, and someone you've never heard of before, it's a little bit, like, iffy, and, like, the story, it's not bad, but it's not, like, super captivating as a first episode or first arc. Like, I love it now because I'm like, oh, it's those clone troopers. I love those clone troopers. But when I recommend it to people who like Star Wars, I have to be like, okay, but, like, if you struggle with these episodes, you can start, like, in season 2 or 3, because, like, it's not chronological anyways. Like, it's fine. You can you can jump off there and then go back to these episodes once you understand them. And like Rebels as well starts off quite quite childish, like not in a bad way, it's just it's aimed at children, and then as the kids age, it ages with them like the Clone Wars did. And I think Resistance is like that, but it was aimed at a younger audience to begin with than Rebels was, which means that it is harder for us to latch onto it because it's got an even younger demographic that it's aiming to. And so like all of the animated shows, I think, have this issue that when they begin, they're not like solid stories. And that's like an issue with everything. Like, I mean, like Steven Universe, I'm just going to throw it out to another cartoon. Steven Universe, like the first few episodes aren't like super engaging for the entire story of the show. They're like fun kid episodes, but they're not like important things that you're like, yeah. Oh, this is very intriguing. And I think that's a thing, I guess, because I watch a lot of cartoons, I'm quite used to this happening, but it is a struggle for people, and I understand that. And so like whenever I recommend these shows to people, I have to be like, it is a kid's show. Like, you will have to deal with that at times. But if you love the Star Wars content enough, like, there is good story there.
I think Resistance is structurally fine. I often found the Clone Wars to be overly kind of corny and to to not have a, like, internal consistency all the time. And, like, some of the dialogue just didn't make sense. Resistance does not have those problems. Resistance is technically fine. It doesn't have things like, well, no, occasionally there was that one case in Resistance where a stormtrooper said he was leaving a room 3 times in a row and then left the room. There are some technical hiccups, but generally I like it well enough. The question, is it memorable for me? Is it personally like super engaging for me? No, not really. So I'm still a, like, it's good, it's fun. I'm starting to see moments of maybe I am really invested in these characters. Maybe, like, they're kind of slowly creeping up on me, creeping up on my heart. But it's not, I'm still not, like, dying for it, you know?
Yeah, I think as it goes on, it's entirely possible it will just creep up into our hearts. I really like it. Like, I don't love it, but I really like it for just how much fun it is. When I binged, like, the first part of the season when we last did an episode, I just had a lot of fun watching it. It's kind of goofy. It's very Star Wars in a lot of ways. Annoying me, but he's still, like, lovable in his own way. I'm probably never going to love it to the same level I love the Clone Wars, but that's very hard considering the Clone Wars is what got me back into Star Wars. I think I'm going to enjoy it as long as it, like, stays kind of fun and still interesting. I think I'm gonna like really enjoy it just into the future.
Yeah, I think it has room to grow, just like I think Clone Wars did, just like the Rebels show did. I mean, there's room for growth for the show. I just don't know if as of right now if I could really recommend it. But at the same time, I wouldn't recommend season, I get, you know, I'll take what I said back, Saf. You're right. I think season one of Clone Wars, you have to love Star Wars prequels a little bit to get, you know, I take it back. Yeah. You're right. You're one. I apologize.
Like, they're not, you're bad. Right. They're not bad. They're not bad. You do need to have that love in the first place to get past that.
You're right. Absolutely. I do. I loved it because I just love Star Wars. So when I first saw it, I'm kind of remembering now because I thought about showing my other friends who were kind of anti-prequel people for the most part. And I'm like, you gotta watch Clone Wars. Like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, come on. And I think you're right. The first season, it's like, well, I don't know. But that second season, so good.
And yeah, that's when it ramps up. And even like the first season and the first half of the second season like have that older animation style. And then as it like kind of ramps up in animation, it also kind of ramps up in story. As well as like even past that, the animation keeps getting better. Like the Lost Missions, the animation is just, ugh, so good. You can tell they had a lot of budget to blow on that.
Incredible.
So amazing. And like that's the thing, is like when I get people introduced to the Clone Wars, like I'll usually introduce them with like people who, like some of my friends, I introduced them with the Yoda arc right at the end of the Clone Wars, because I was like, okay, this is the Force stuff you want. That's, which is like damn. Beautiful, beautiful episodes, beautiful story. Like, and then I was like, oh no, actually taking them back to the start of the Clone Wars after that is going to be kind of rough.
Yeah, that's the thing. How are they going to follow up? It's really, really hard for me for them to follow up Lost Missions, in my opinion, with this new arc they're going to have with the Mandalorian arc with Ahsoka.
What about that? Everyone. We are getting more Clone Wars.
Wait. Yeah, so it's good. Oh, right, we're talking about new Clone Wars. I forgot that was a thing for a second.
Yeah, so did I. Oh my okay. God, that's a hack.
That's going to be a topic unto itself.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at some point in the future.
Right.
It just won't go away.
as far as Resistance goes, I think that they have everything's there except for the story at this point. I think they have to work on getting for the second season, which I think it's already been announced and picked up. The second season needs to really kind of ramp it up a little bit, and I'm hoping it does, because it seems like the show's getting a little better. Let's ramp up the threat a little bit. Let's maybe see the Knights of Ren in the second season, huh?
I mean, of course.
I mean, come on. We'll pull Clone Wars, right?
Come on. Give Paul the Knights of Ren, please. Someone.
That's all I want.
All right. I think that's a good stopping point for our very news-heavy episode this week. Give Paul Knights of Ren is our rallying cry for the rest of the...
I need to make that a pin.
I mean, I got BB-19 Resistance. The least you could do is give Paul at least one Knight of Ren.
At least one. It doesn't have to be Kylo. Just give me a Knight of Ren. Anybody. It could be like the last guy. It could be like the guy who's like, who's pledging to be a Knight of Ren. He's like really crappy and like he can't do anything. And he's like falling off the thing, the side of the Colossus like Kaz all the time because he's so clumsy. So I'll take that.
The first order version of Kaz. Wait, so what do you count...
I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
Do you count Kylo as a Knight of Ren in this situation? Like, I believe Kylo is going to show up on Resistance eventually. I think, although it's hard, I thought that was inevitable. And now with how close they're coming to the movies themselves, I'm not sure. But so if Kylo Ren shows up, is that what you want? Or do you want a new Knight of Ren?
I'll take whatever they'll give me. Okay. I'll take Kylo. But I would love if they didn't want to use Kylo, they want to use like J-Ren. I'll take J-Ren.
Like they could make maybe the Knights of Ren kind of like the Inquisitors, right? In Rebels, like you got like the fifth brother and the sixth sister or whatever.
Yes,
but the Knights of Ren did.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If JJ doesn't even plan on using them in the movies, maybe they could just do that. That would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm down. I think I actually named a future Knight of Ren, guys. J-Ren. I want J-Ren name. I hope they haven't named them all yet. There's probably at least, what, six or seven? They're probably trying to figure it out right now.
Yeah,
and
I'm J-Ren. Well, to figure it out too.
If they make it six or seven, they might as well go all the way and just make them Knights of Ten.
I was thinking about
that one for a while. Okay.
That is a good point to end this on, because we can't top that now.
All right. Well, thank everyone for listening. We can also be found at denofgeek.com and wherever podcasts are hosted, including on Spotify. Where can we find you two on the internet?
YouTube.com?
I know. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, Megan. I'm sorry. You can find me on Twitter at Herman22 with two N's, aka P-Thug. See my other podcast at Marvel Newscast on Twitter. And I'm on there with my buddy Sean. We do lots of Marvel stuff. We got a Patreon. We got all kinds of good Discord stuff on there. Also see my other Star Wars podcast, The Saga Continues, with my buddies Kyle and Tim.
You can find me on Twitter at Wanderlustin, WanderLustin. I will hopefully have like an unlocked account by the time this episode happens. But if I don't, just chuck me a follow request and I'll accept you. It's fine.
And I can be found at Blog Full of Words on Twitter. You can also follow us as a unit at Blaster Cannon Pod, which is also a good place to leave feedback if you like the show or want to suggest a topic.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.